Tales of Romance. I'm Martell, reading The Blue Castle by L.M. Montgomery. Chapter 7. There was a rose bush on the little Stirling lawn, growing beside the gate. It was called Doss's Rosebush. Cousin Georgiana had given it to Valency 5 years ago, and Valency had planted it joyfully. She loved roses. But, of course, the rosebush never bloomed. That was her luck. Valency did everything she could think of, and took the advice of everybody in the clan. But still, the rosebush would not bloom. It throve and grew luxuriantly, with great leafy branches untouched by rust or spider, but not even a bud had ever appeared on it. Valency, looking at it 2 days after her birthday, was filled with a sudden, overwhelming hatred for it. The thing wouldn't bloom. Well, very well, then, she would cut it down. She marched to the tool room in the barn for her garden knife, and she went at the rose bush viciously. A few minutes later, horrified Mrs. Frederick came out to the veranda and beheld her daughter slashing insanely among the rosebush boughs. Half of them were already strewn on the sidewalk. The bush looked sadly dismantled.
"Doss, what on earth are you doing? Have you gone crazy?"
"No," said Valency. She meant to say it defiantly, but habit was too strong for her. She said it deprecatingly.
"I just made up my mind to cut this bush down. It is no good. It never blooms, never will bloom." "That is no reason for destroying it," said Mrs. Frederick sternly. "It was a beautiful bush and quite ornamental. You have made a sorry-looking thing out of it."
"Rose tree should bloom," said Valency a little obstinately.
"Don't argue with me, Doss. Clear up that mess and leave the bush alone. I don't know what Georgiana will say when she sees how you have hacked it to pieces. Really, I'm surprised at you. And to do it without consulting me."
"The bush is mine," muttered Valency.
"What's that? What did you say, Doss?"
"I only said the bush was mine," repeated Valency humbly. Mrs. Frederick turned without a word and marched back into the house. Oh, the mischief was done now. Valency knew she had offended her mother deeply and would not be spoken to or noticed in any way for 2 or 3 days. Cousin Stickles would see to Valency's bringing up, but Mrs. Frederick would preserve the stony silence of outraged majesty. Valency sighed and put away her garden knife, hanging it precisely on its precise nail in the tool shop. She cleared away the several branches and swept up the leaves. Her lips twitched as she looked at the straggling bush. It had an odd resemblance to its shaken, scrawny donor, little cousin Georgiana herself. "I certainly have made an awful-looking thing of it," thought Valency, but she did not feel repentant, only sorry she had offended her mother. Things would be so uncomfortable until she was forgiven. Mrs. Frederick was one of those women who can make their anger felt all over a house. Walls and doors are no protection from it.
"You'd better go uptown and get the mail," said Cousin Stickles, when Valency went in. "I can't go. I feel all sort of peaky and piney this spring. I want you to stop at the drugstore. Get me a bottle of Red Fern's Blood Bitters. There's nothing like Red Fern's Bitters for building a body up. Cousin James says the purple pills are the best, but I know better. My poor dear husband took Red Fern's Bitters right up to the day he died. Don't let them charge you more than 90 cents. I can get it for that at the port. And what have you been saying to your poor mother? Don't you ever stop to think, Doss, that you can only have one mother?"
"One is enough for me," thought Valency undutifully as she went uptown. She got Cousin Stickles' bottle of bitters.
and then she went to the post office and asked for her mail at the general delivery. Her mother did not have a box. They got too little mail to bother with it. Valency did not expect any mail except the Christian Times, which was the only paper they took. They hardly ever got any letters. But Valency rather liked to stand in the post office and watch Mr. Carew, the gray-bearded, Santa Clausy old clerk, handing out letters to the lucky people who did get them. He did it with such a detached, impersonal, Jove-like air, as if it did not matter in the least to him what supernal joys or shattering horrors might be in those letters for the people to whom they were addressed. Letters had a fascination for Valency, perhaps because she so seldom got any. In her blue castle, exciting epistles, bound with silk, sealed with crimson, they were always brought to her by pages in livery of gold and blue. But in real life, her only letters were occasional perfunctory notes from relatives or an advertising circular. Consequently, she was immensely surprised when Mr. Carew, looking even more Jovian than usual, poked a letter out to her. Yes, it was addressed to her plainly, in fierce black hand. Miss Valency Sterling, Elm Street, Deerwood, and the postmark was Montreal. Valency picked it up with a little quickening of her breath. Montreal? Oh, it must be from Dr. Trent. He had remembered her after all. Valency met Uncle Benjamin coming in as she was going out, and was glad the letter was safely in her bag. "What," said Uncle Benjamin, "is the difference between a donkey and a postage stamp?" "I don't know what," answered Valency dutifully. "One you lick with a stick, and the other you stick with a lick." Uncle Benjamin passed in, tremendously pleased with himself. Cousin Stickles pounced on the Times when Valency got home, but it did not occur to her to ask if there were any letters. Mrs. Frederick would have asked it, but Mrs. Frederick's lips, at present, were sealed. Valency was glad of this. If her mother had asked if there were any letters, Valency would have had to admit there was. Then she would have had to let her mother and Cousin Stickles read the letter, and all would be discovered. Her heart acted strangely on the way upstairs, and she sat down by her window for a few minutes before opening her letter. She felt very guilty and deceitful. She had never before kept a letter secret from her mother. Every letter she had ever written or received had been read by Mrs. Frederick. That had never mattered. Valency had never had anything to hide. But this did matter. She could not have anyone see this letter. But her fingers trembled with a consciousness of wickedness and unfilial conduct as she opened it. Trembled a little, too, perhaps, with apprehension. She felt quite sure there was nothing seriously wrong with her heart, but one never knew. Dr. Trent's letter was like himself. Blunt, abrupt, concise, wasting no words. Dr. Trent never beat about the bush. "Dear Miss Sterling," and then a page of black, positive writing. Valency seemed to read it at a glance. She dropped it on her lap, her face ghost white. Dr. Trent told her that she had a very dangerous and fatal form of heart disease, angina pectoris, evidently complicated with an aneurysm, whatever that was, and in the last stages. He said without mincing matters that nothing could be done for her if she took great care of herself. She might live a year, but she also might die at any moment. Dr. Trent never troubled himself about euphemisms. She must be careful to avoid all excitement and all severe muscular efforts. She must eat and drink moderately. She must never run. She must go upstairs and uphill with great care. Any sudden shock or jolt might be fatal. She was to get the prescription he enclosed filled and to carry it with her always, taking a dose whenever her attacks came on, and he was hers truly, H.B. Trent. Valency sat for a long while by her window. Outside was a world drowned in the light of a spring afternoon. Skies entrancingly blue, winds perfumed and free, lovely soft blue hazes. At the end of every street, over at the railway station, a group of young girls was waiting for a train. She heard their gay laughter as they chattered and joked. The train roared in and roared out again, but none of these things had any reality. Nothing had any reality, except the fact that she had only another year to live. When she was tired of sitting at the window, she went over and lay down on her bed, staring at the cracked, discolored ceiling. The curious numbness that follows on a staggering blow possessed her. She did not feel anything except a boundless surprise and incredulity, behind which was the conviction that Dr. Trent knew his business, and that she, Valency Sterling, who had never lived, was about to die. When the gong rang for supper, Valency got up and went downstairs mechanically from force of habit. She wondered that she had been let alone so long, but of course her mother would not pay any attention to her just now. Valency was thankful for this. She thought the quarrel over the rose bush had been really, as Mrs. Frederick herself might have said, providential. She could not eat anything, but both Mrs. Frederick and Cousin Stickles thought this was because she was deservedly unhappy over the mother's attitude, and her lack of appetite was not commented on. Valency forced herself to swallow a cup of tea, and then sat and watched the others eat, with an odd feeling that years had passed since she had sat with them at the dinner table. She found herself smiling inwardly to think what a commotion she could make if she chose. Let her merely tell them what was in Dr. Trent's letter, and there would be as much fuss made as if, Valency thought bitterly, they really cared two straws about her.
Dr. Trent's housekeeper got word from him today, said Cousin Stickles so suddenly that Valency jumped guiltily. Was there anything in thought waves? Mrs. Judd was talking to her uptown. They think his son will recover, but Dr. Trent wrote that if he did, he was going to take him abroad as soon as he was able and wouldn't be back here for a year at least.
That will not matter much to us, said Mrs. Frederick majestically. He is not our doctor. I would not.
Here she looked or seemed to look accusingly right through Valency.
Have him to doctor a sick cat.
May I go upstairs and lie down? Said Valency faintly. I have a headache.
What has given you a headache? Asked Cousin Stickle,
since Mrs. Frederick would not. The question has to be asked. Valency could not be allowed to have headaches without interference.
You ain't in the habit of having headaches. I hope you're not taking the mumps. Here, try a spoonful of vinegar.
Piffle, said Valency rudely, getting up from the table. She did not care just then if she were rude. She had had to be so polite all her life. If it had been possible for Cousin Stickles to turn pale, she would have. As it was not, she turned yellower.
You sure? You ain't feverish, Doss. You sound like it. You go and get right into bed, said Cousin Stickles, thoroughly alarmed, and I'll come up and rub your forehead and the back of your neck with Red Fern's liniment.
Valency had reached the door, but she turned.
I won't be rubbed with Red Fern's liniment, she said.
Cousin Stickles stared and gasped.
What? What do you mean?
I said I wouldn't be rubbed with Red Fern's liniment, repeated Valency.
Horrid, sticky stuff, and it has the vilest smell of any liniment I ever saw. It's no good. I want to be left alone, that's all.
Valency went out, leaving Cousin Stickles aghast.
She's feverish. She must be feverish, ejaculated Cousin Stickles.
Mrs. Frederick went on eating her supper It did not matter whether Valency was or was not feverish. Valency had been guilty of impertinence to her.
Join me next time for another romantic chapter of The Blue Castle by L.M. Montgomery here on Love's Tender Flame. Until then, love deeply and live beautifully.